The Batteries Included podcast is brought to you with United Chargers and their Grizzly range. The next generation of Grizzly is here. Meet the Grizzly Ultimate, the most powerful AC level 2 charger for home use. With a maximum current of 80 amps, that's 19.2 kilowatts, your vehicle could be charged up to twice as fast as a standard level 2 and up to 15 times faster than a level 1. And of course, it's Wi-Fi connected, so you can take control of your home charging, view stats, set a charging schedule, take part in demand response programs, and control your charger remotely. And that joins the lineup alongside the original Grizzly Classic. The Grizzly Duo, designed to charge two vehicles at the same time. The Grizzly Mini, a portable charging station. And the Grizzly Smart, a revolutionary smart EV charger. Those chargers can adjust the current from 16 amps up to 40 amps, that's 9.6 kilowatts. Plus, the Grizzly Ranger IP67 rated, built in Canada, and with the highest quality materials, you can order yours right now. Go to unitedchargers.com, that's unitedchargers.com. Well, hello and welcome to the Batteries Included podcast. Friday, January 17th, episode 71 on today's show. Is the Cybertruck a Cyber Smash or a Cyber Flop? The deals are now on. You can get money off and production appears to be slowing, but it's the US's number one EV truck. So which one is it? We'll discuss. The surge in EV sales that's happening ahead of tax credit cuts and new EVs from Acura and Polestar, and of course, much, much more. I'm your host, Martin Lee, from the EV News Daily podcast. Delighted to say I've just recorded my first one in ages. Now I'm finally feeling better, and thank you to all my listeners for reaching out. And joining me today is the bodacious Mr. Tom Mologany, senior editor at Inside EVs and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. Tom, it's just us. Dom's on holiday. Kyle is storming around China. What's the latest from Kyle? Because he's loving the technology.
Yeah, so I mean, if for those that watch him on social media, he's all over the place posting pictures and videos. He's at Neo battery swap stations. He's charging, you know, 600 kilowatts. He's just all over the country doing Kyle stuff, as you can imagine. So I can't wait till we really start getting the real content. You know, he's posting little snippets here and there, but he's taking China by storm. He took a picture at the station where you get a temporary or provisional driver's license, they call. I know that well. I've been there and had to go through that process. And, you know, it's he's going to get a lot of really cool stuff because, you know, there's so much going on over in China. You guys have heard us talk about that a lot. I think a lot of our followers are kind of split on, oh, this is great. Tell us the latest thing. And then we also get some people that are like, I don't want to hear about this communist crap. You know, they're not taking over the industry. But whether we like it or not, China is making incredible moves and progress over there. They're on the cutting edge of technology. I've been there numerous times. I've driven their cars. They're making really good cars now. It's not cheap, low quality stuff that was, you know, just a few years ago, very few people would consider buying a Chinese car. So Kyle's learning firsthand what's going on over there now. Can't wait till he gets back so we could talk about it. You know, he's going to learn a lot over there. He's going to bring back a lot of information for us.
Yeah, and if we get time to it in the running order today, we've got some of the global 2024 EV sales numbers, which are all now rolling in. They get mopped up and stuff a couple of weeks into January, and that will prove how big a deal China is. And I know what you mean about the quality coming out of China, not just because I drive my last two cars. I was the MG and then the Polestar, and they were fine, and I get all the political side of it as well. But I guess you have to be, you know, sometimes you get accused of, you know, oh, you know, you're sort of using a shorthand or even maybe even sort of culturally a little bit racist as well. But you know, you have to be a certain age where you remember there was an era of Chinese stuff that was just cheap and crap, but there was also an era of the Japanese car industry that was cheap and crap, and there was an era of the South Korean car industry that was cheap and crap, and none of those apply anymore. But I guess if you've been around a little bit longer, you'll know what we're talking about in the, you know, certain countries have made big strides forward. But you're absolutely right. You don't go back too far, and it was, you know, a lot of copying, a lot of stealing of designs, and just a lot of naff stuff that is all in the history books now. It's really, really good stuff coming out of China, but so many issues around it, like you say. Let's get into what you've been doing this week then.
And Martin, let me just cut him one second. And it was also a political aspect to it back then. I'm old enough to know, to hear my grandfather telling me, I'll never buy a Japanese car, you know, and he didn't say the whole Japanese word. He truncated it, and that was because, you know, politics back then, you know, he was in his, I guess, late 30s or no, he was in his 40s when Pearl Harbor happened. So, you know, there's, you know, even back then there was, you know, political reasons why people said, I'm not buying anything from this country. It's kind of like how a lot of people feel about China now, but times change.
Absolutely. Well, look, Kyle's busy. You've been busy as well. And you really surprised me, actually, with a video that you came with this week. I didn't know this was coming. We often talk about things that we're working on. And you and I haven't spoken in a while because I've been a little off the radar and what have you. But you came with a video, this fascinating video this week. ChargePoint have been working hard in the background on theft-resistant cables. Now, like, I don't get out of the house a lot anymore because I work for myself now, and I don't do the reviews that you and Kyle do. So a lot of my work is based like these four walls, which sounds pretty sad, but you know, I like it. I got two young kids, so I like being at home now. And but I don't see chargers with no cables and cables being cut, and I'm not seeing news stories. But it is a real problem, and so much so that ChargePoint and the CEO Rick Wilmer took it on themselves to put some R&D, some money into investing into, can you have a cable that is resistant to being cut? And you put a video out this week, sort of in, there's two parts to this story, but the first one's the cable part. So what have ChargePoint done?
Yeah, so they went to their, I won't say supplier, to the company that makes their products. One of the things that ChargePoint does is they make a lot of their own equipment. They don't go to suppliers and source a cable, source a connector. It's one of the reasons why when I do the ChargePoint home reviews here, their cable and connector is always like at the top of my list of favorite cables and connectors, because they don't just go on the market and get 10 cables and then say, okay, we'll take this one. They actually have their own cable designed to their specifications, and it's a great cable. So with that to the side, they went back to the companies that produce their equipment and said, look at this problem that we're having. These things are getting cut off all over the place. Our customers are calling us up. They just installed a row of 25 level 2 chargers at workplace charging or something. You know, on Monday morning, the employees pull up, all the cables are cut off, and they're not going to keep paying for this. They'll just take the chargers out, and now we won't have any charging. We have to solve this. So they went and engineered a cable, and I haven't had a chance to play with it yet. I'm going to. They're going to give me one, and I'm going to do a bunch of torture tests with it to see just how theft-proof it is. But that claims that on the inside of the outer rubberized jacket, there's another jacket, and that's of some sort of stainless steel, and it is flexible, it's lightweight, and it's very cut-resistant. Now, you can get through it if you stand there long enough with, say, a grinder and a very aggressive blade on that. You'll eventually get through it, I'm sure, like a sawzall with a heavy metal blade. But the thing about these thieves, they want to get in and out. They don't want to be standing there with like zzz, at night with sparks flying 8 feet, you know, where people are looking at them and take 5 minutes to get to each cable. You watch some videos online of them stealing cables. They've got mostly like the bolt cutters where they just go like, boom, grab the cable, go to the next one. Boom. They're in and out of there in less than a minute. They can have 6 or 7 cables. So this idea, if it works as well as it's demonstrated, will go a long way in deterring theft, because they'll just give up. It won't be worth their time. They won't. These thieves are opportunistic. They're not, organized companies that come out with the latest technology and hydraulic bolt cutters. These people are looking to get their next high, you know, and sell cable to a scrapyard and go buy drugs in most instances. So this should work for at least reducing it on the sites that have it. Now, how much will it cost? I don't know. Which sites are going to get upgraded? There's still a lot of questions, but it's a great step in the right direction. And ChargePoint, or at least Rick Wilmer, the CEO of ChargePoint that I talked to, said that ChargePoint will license the technology. Let's say EVgo came, you know, said, look, we have to have this type of technology, and they don't want to go through using their own resources to engineer it or whatever. They could go to ChargePoint and license it. And Rick said that they, you know, the Of course, it'll cost money, but it will not be an onerous ask. Like they want the whole industry to have this stuff. They just would ask to be, you know, have some money back for the money that they cost them to engineer this and that they poured into finding it. So
yeah, that was my question to you, because obviously we should be clear, ChargePoint's not a CPO, a ChargePoint operator. They make the hardware, and the landowner or the business owner has that hardware. So first of all, they can't make anyone change the cables. And of course, they're coming to somebody who they've already taken money from, or maybe even have an ongoing service contract, and they're billing them regularly. And now they're like, we want some more money off you. So it's great that they've done this. What's the reality of the situation? Do you think site owners will want to pay for it? Can they? What's the attitude there?
So I think it's going to take a little time because we'll put it this way. If a site gets vandalized and the cables get cut off and stolen, wouldn't it make sense for that site owner to do one of two things? Say, to hell with this charging stuff. I'm turning them off. I'm not going to spend another $10,000 to put cables on these chargers. Or they could say, ChargePoint will come back with them and say, look, we have theft-resistant cables now. Let us replace those cables with these. It's going to cost you a little more, but this should end your problem. You know, somebody may come back next week and try to cut one, and what's going to happen is they're going to mess up that one cable. We'll have to come back and replace that one cable, but they'll leave frustrated because they didn't get it off. And now they won't come back. So this is going to take some time, but it's a good step in the right direction.
So you talk in the video about, you know, if you took an angle grinder to it with, you know, the diamond tip blade and a cutting, you could probably get through it in time. But a lot of these thieves are turning up with bolt cuppers or bolt croppers or, you know, snippers or whatever word you use where you live. And they just want to be in and out and they want to go. So that it stops that. There's also a second part of this, which is kind of the alarm system. Now, there are lights, LED lights on a lot of charging stations, maybe not some of the slower ones, perhaps, but some of the ones will change color when they're available. When you pull into a charging station, you quickly scan with your eye which ones, you know, maybe green. Everyone has different colors and stuff. You know which one to pull up to. Some of them turn different colors when you start a charge or even out of order. So they're going to use that. And I was surprised that some of these chargers have speakers in that aren't really being used for some sort of alarm system. So how's that going to work?
Yeah. So when the charger senses that there's been somebody trying to damage the cable or steal the cable, this will go off. And there's lights on both sides of these are the level 2 ChargePoint chargers where the cables come out of both sides of them. There's LEDs and there's also a speaker. Rick seemed to think that that's going to be a big deterrent, that the lights are bright and that the sirens are loud. I'd like to hear how loud they are, because we're so desensitized to car alarms going off and so forth. People typically don't blink. And, these people that are stealing the stuff, I don't know if that's going to be a huge deterrent. I think the real deterrent's going to be that, you know, that if they're standing there for 2 minutes on that first cable and they're trying to their best to get it and they can't, even with an alarm going off, they're going to turn around, get in their car and drive away. But the alarm might scare them in that they might think that this is triggered like a call to the police or something. Currently, I don't think that's what happens. It won't call the police. The site owner will get a text message when this goes off. Now, they can immediately say, okay, you know, something's going on at my chargers. Let me call the police, see if they can roll a car over there to see what's happening on my property. And in many instances, people have remote surveillance systems. So they can... if they get that text alert, they can look at their video and say, oh, wow, somebody is trying to mess with this. Let me call the police and then say, hey, there's a guy in a white Toyota. He's trying to cut the cables off my chargers. So, yeah, it'll help. It'll be part of the solution. But to me, the vandal resistant cables are the big part of the story.
Mm. Simon says, what lots of people say, which is run current through the cables. Now, in your video, with Rick, you actually played a clip of a video in from somebody cutting a cable at a Tesla supercharger, I think it was, which was energized. And like, there's sparks everywhere, but like the guy wasn't hurt, and then he throws it in his boot and he drives off. And the guy charging his Tesla like gets out of the car. What just happened? Like, these are not smart people. No. Like these criminals that are cutting cables. So I don't even know if energizing the cable is going to do any good. It might just, the minute it has a fault, you know, some sort of you know, grounding or earth bolt, it just cuts off. And so, you know,
you'll damage your bolt cutters though. They'll be, the edges of the bolt cutters will be all melted.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've
mistakenly cut through wires. Now, not 400 volt, you know, high DC fast charging wires, but I've cut through 240 volt wires. And, you know, as long as I'm grounded and, you know, my pliers have rubber grips and I have gloves on and everything, I never got a shock or anything, but it destroys your wire cutters. You know,
they about it.
The whole edge is just melted. So yeah, I'm sure that's what happened with this guy in that video where you could see him using a bolt cutter, sparks fly. I bet you that's the last time he used that bolt cutter, but, and he didn't get, he didn't get that specific cable. Rick thought he did because Rick said, you know, in the video, you see him snapping the cable and ripping it and throwing his. But if you watch the video closely, it is at night. After he cuts it and sparks fly, he grabs it and yanks on it a few times, but it's tethered to the guy's car. The connector's not going to, the guy is not going to release from the vehicle. So then the guy gets out of his car and the thief just jumps in his car and drives away. So, but still, that's no. You know, that's really no consolation. You know, imagine sitting in your car and all of a sudden you see a big flash of light behind you and then a car driving away with the cable just hanging out of your car.
Yeah.
So, but it's a big problem. And hopefully this will be part of a solution. You know, it's not going to be the be all end all. I saw a lot of people posting, oh, you know, just do what Europe does and have, you know, bring your own cable. Well, we can't do that for DC Fast.
No.
So let's take that out of the equation. And we're already so far down the road with public charging and chargers. We're not going to switch to bring your own cable here in the U.S. Yeah. I like that idea. I always liked it in Europe. I thought, you know, I'd like to keep my cable nice and clean, and I know nobody else touches it. And I'll be fine bringing it with me in a little bag. And when I've driven in Europe, as I have on many times on vacations and gotten electric cars, I didn't mind it at all. I preferred it rather than pulling up to public chargers and you know, even I don't even like grabbing the handles half the times. So I'll bring like a wipe and clean them off. But I'm only a little bit of a germaphobe, not a major one. But,
yeah, I mean, look, that's over here. That is perhaps an inconvenience that we carry our own cables. Perhaps an inconvenience that you have to know what cable is in your car, because you can buy a 32 amp single phase cable. You can buy a 16 amp three phase cable. You can buy a 32 amp three phase cable if you want your car to charge at 7 or 11 or 22 kilowatts. That's where even small frunks are really useful, because they inevitably get buried in the boot of the car. And then you pile all your stuff in, and I've got kids, and so everything gets piled on top, and then you go to charge, and so that's the downside. That's rubbish, and you shouldn't have to know what cables are rated for, but you do. If you drive an EV, I guess some people don't, but anyway, you should do, and it says it on the cable. But you can't do any damage, because the cable and the car and the charger all talk to each other. You're on AC, it knows not to do any damage, but. That's a downside. But then, as you say, Tom, the upside is that if you've got like a frunk and you've got somewhere handy, it is no bother at all. You just pull up and you plug your own Type 2 to Type 2 in, and you're off and away. And like, it's not a big deal. So, you're used to what you're used to, aren't you? So we're just used to it. So
let me grab a comment from Nunya, and it says, "Who cares? This cable talk is meaningless. Only CPOs in San Francisco will buy it." And I specifically talked to Rick about this question. And I said, you know, there are people out there that just think, you know, the entirety of California is a boiling hellhole of, you know, just vagrants and crime. And, you know, it's, you know, it's literally hell on earth. So it's your problem. It's not our problem. And, you know, Rick's products are all across the country, you know, and, you know, he said, that's just not the case. You know, we have cable theft is an issue everywhere. It's an issue in Europe too. It's an issue in Canada. This isn't like, oh, the charging cables in California are getting stolen, so like it's their problem. Now the people are taking this opportunistic approach anywhere they can. If there's a dark parking lot at night, they're cutting them off. There's been news reports all over the country, in Texas, in Pennsylvania. You know, we've seen things happen here in New Jersey. So this isn't just an isolated problem in California. It's all over.
All right, Tom. Well, we'll take a quick break. And when we come back, more of today's Batteries Included podcast. All right, welcome back to the podcast, which is Tom reviewing the all-new Flow Home X6 EV charger. Tom, you put this through your usual battering ram of tests. Nothing gets left behind. Everything gets tested from, you know, temperatures and heat and cold and all that kind of stuff. And so what did you make of this new charger? I'll bring the video up in a moment and show some scores when we get to that. But what did you make of this one? Recommend or not?
Sure. Yeah, definitely, as I expected, added the Flow lineup to my recommended charging lists. And Flow's been making chargers for a while. They're a Canadian company. Always been very durable, cast aluminum. The big knock against them have been that they were low powered. The first generation X5 and G5 were only 30 amps, and they were very expensive. So Flow came out with a new, complete new lineup. Two 50 amp units, the X3 and X5, X6, and then the X8 is the 80 amp charger. They all look the same. They're very, very similar. So I kind of made this a review of all of them, even though I only had an X3 and X5, X6 here in the garage. And super high quality. The difference between the X3 and X6 is that the X3 has a thermal plastic enclosure, whereas the X6 and X8 have cast aluminum. And as you see what I'm doing there, if you're watching on YouTube, on the X6 and X8, the connector holster is removable. You can take that off the front, just put a little cover on it, and then remotely install your connector holster. I thought that was a neat feature. You don't see that on other EVSE, that you can actually just take the holster off and then put it anywhere you want in the garage. There are plenty of units that have remote connector holsters, but not either or, not where you take it off. So the bit of ingenuity there on Flow, because there are a lot of people that like to have remote connector holsters. They'd prefer to have their connector holstered maybe on the side of their car, which might be 20, 10 feet from their the body of the unit. But it's a real solid unit. It's still, while they've come down in price from their first generation, it's still at the upper end of the cost, which is one of the knocks that I have against it. The X6 that you see here is $749. It is a Wi-Fi connected smart charger. It does have some features. It can daisy chain, but it doesn't intelligently daisy chain. When you daisy chain this with multiple units, you lower the dip switches inside the two units or three units or whatever to a lower amount of current, that so that it won't overload the circuit, the single circuit that is feeding it. So a little bit of a knock there on that. I mean, it's good that it has that feature. I prefer having it than not, but it is better when they can intelligently balance power within the unit and, you know, send a varying amount of current to each unit. This way, when you lower it, even if there's only one car charging, you're still getting the low current. It did good on the deep freeze test. It has the thinnest cable that we've ever tested, specifically for a 50 amp unit. It's under 14 millimeters, super thin cable, thinner than the Tesla wall connectors, which has a real thin cable in itself. But it did fine. It didn't really warm up much. It did great in the extreme heat test, passed, automatic restart test. Everything did fine, but it's a good, solid choice. I like this new lineup of Flow units. There's an 80 amp, as I said, plus the 250 amps. And to me, the buy might be the X3, which is the 50 amp unit that's thermoplastic. It's not aluminum, but it still has an EMA 4 rating. So it's the same weatherproof rating as the aluminum units do. And it's good, thick thermoplastic. It's strong. And it cost $599, I think it's $599. So it's $150 less than the X6. And it's a good solid unit. It comes with the Flow app, which you can use for home charging as well as public charging on the Flow network, which, you know, they are proliferating the Flow network. It's getting bigger. I know when I go up to Vermont, I use Flow chargers up there every now and then, but it's big in Canada in particular, and some of the northern states, I think, here in the U.S.
One of our viewers on YouTube, NB Volks, says, can you have two Flow chargers in two different locations run on the same app/account? I guess if you had a holiday home or a cabin or a business, two sites in your business. It's a pretty niche use case, so maybe that's more common problem than I realize. What do you think?
I think you can. I haven't tried that. I know I have multiple flows here linked.
Well, maybe Tom has dipped out. Or it's me. Maybe Tom has dipped out. Let me know if you are not seeing him. Maybe his internet has gone a little bit. Yeah, maybe it is just me and you guys watching at the moment. For me, Tom has dipped out. But Greg says, it is Tom. Another earthquake, says Gary. So looks like I'm around, and Douglas is saying, yeah, we see you. Marcus says, yeah, Tom is frozen. Okay, we'll try and get Tom back. And if not, it's just you and I. So strap yourself in. But hopefully Tom reconnects and realizes that his internet is not working too well. Simon says, bye, Tom. I hope not, because I can't hold down an hour on my own. But so Tom's gone to check his Flow account right now. So Cicero Holmes, none you got, Tom, says Thomas. Yeah, maybe. All right, so look, lots of stuff to get to on the podcast this week. One of the things that we'll talk about is one of the Out of Spec videos that was out earlier this week. This one with Jordan, looking at the new Hyundai Ioniq 5 with native NACS on the side versus the new Highland, not so new anymore, Tesla Model 3 long range. Which one would get to 80% first if you give Tesla home court advantage and charge it on a supercharger? We probably need Tom for that one, because I want to bring Tom in on any of that kind of chat. So we will wait. Right, we'll run through a couple of things that you can see on screen while Tom reconnects. One of those is the new Polestar. Now, Polestar 7 is going to be made in the European area. I'll pop that on screen for you. Actually, it's not a picture to look on screen, but there's all the details which I can show you. So you might think, okay, so Polestar, where are we now? 2 is on and 3 and 4 just about. Why are we talking about 7? Because we haven't got 5 yet. You're right. 5 is coming. That's being engineered in the UK and Coventry in the Midlands, actually. So that's going to be a UK engineered car. And I've seen videos online of them doing, I think, like brake calibration stuff going down mountains. And that's usually, you know, in terms of a program, that program's probably pretty close to being coming to market sometime soon, and at least getting more details on the Polestar 5 this year in 2025. 6 is going to be, I think that's a little 2+2 roadster car, and then the Polestar 7 is going to be talking about a replacement to the Polestar 2, but not a direct replacement. That's going to be something like a Porsche Macan replacement, or maybe a Range Rover Evoque replacement. So there's been some renders online, and some, you know, I think Inside EVs, maybe Top Gear sort of did their own of this is what it could look like. But we had some car news this week on that, so that's super interesting. Thank goodness Tom's back, because I can't do an hour on my own. And also, we will... We'll come back to the out-of-spec testing in a moment, because I want to, obviously, yeah, that's home turf for Tom. But also, I want to talk a little bit about the Acura RSX. It's going to be on its own platform. I'll pop a... We do get a picture of that, Tom. We can see it. It's the only one that we've got. Acura is not a brand that we have here in the UK or Europe. Acura cars are sold under the Honda brand, because Honda is... I'd say Honda is solid over here in the UK. I mean, they're top 20. I think Honda are in a good place in the UK and Europe. I think they're happy with their profitability, and they're happy with how many cars they sell, how many cars they can service, their customer base. I think they're outside the top 10 in the UK, but solid, I would say. Whereas, obviously, you guys get Acura. So we saw this this one picture of the Acura RSX, because we know it comes before the end of this year. SUV with a coupe-like design. So, obviously, Tesla Model Y is going to get cross-shopped on this. Obviously, Mustang Mach-E is going to get cross-shopped, on this. The charge flap is on the front fender, interesting. Driver's side, left-hand drive car, obviously. So interesting place to put it. A lot of people are putting it on the rear left to match Tesla with the supercharger network being unlocked. But it's not a massive problem because you should drive in. Actually, no, the other way around. But they will be longer cables. So that's fine. Pricing, range, charging times, battery. We know none of these things, but I thought I'd show it on screen because it's a new car this week, along with news of the Polestar 7 Acura RSX coming this year with customers 2026. What do you think, Tom? Is this lighting your fire or a little bit identikit at the minute?
Yeah, sorry about that cutout. Look, drop the internet for a bit. I agree with a lot of the comments here. I mean, the first thing that I did when I saw this picture online without even reading the headlines was looking at the front half of it. I was like, wow, is Ford coming out with like a model a Mach-E refresh? You know, that really, really feels Mach-E-ish, except a little bit for the back end. But Honda has to at this point understand that they're behind and they need to get out there with a strong offering. And I mean, this seems to be the form factor that everybody wants and that everybody's buying in a vehicle, this type of size of a crossover, you know, the whole Model Y, Mach-E, Ioniq 5, you know, EV 6, you know, let's go one after the other, Equinox. It's what families here in the U.S. want. So yeah, it's good to see that they're coming out with something that they designed. And I believe it's going to be built here in U.S. So, I mean, I don't know if that's going to make any difference in a year or so as far as credits go. It would make a difference now, but we're going to have a lot of change in a couple months. But I think it's fine. It's better than them buying tech from GM.
Yep, I'll add some details to that. So yes, it'll be made Honda's EV Hub, as they're calling it, in Ohio. Okay start to their EV world, the ZDX or ZDX. 7,391 sales so far in 2024. Really, so you know, an okay start, but this is going to be their own platform, their own assembly lines, where they all, you know, roll down internal combustion and hybrid and battery electric cars at the same time. And that retooling is underway right now. Their Honda EV Hub in Ohio, the first of six thousand ton high pressure die cast machines at the Anna engine plant are currently going in. So they're busy doing all this, and so you know, their own platform and their own creation on that, which is, you know, looking forward to seeing. Seeing that. Okay, let's get back to what I mentioned to the viewers and the listeners a moment ago, which was Out of Spec had a new Hyundai Ioniq 5 native NACS along with Corbin, who is the Ioniq guy online in terms of his handle, and a real expert. And Jordan did this one for Out of Spec. This wasn't the new sort of Out of Spec. What's the channel? The technical testing, Out of Spec testing. This was on reviews, but they had the new Ioniq 5, a Model 3 long range, both batteries preconditioned. The Ioniq, he'd gone to, I think, to Colorado to collect it because the Northeast didn't have any of this all-wheel drive big battery, and so perfect for Out of Spec to take it to a supercharger, native NACS, and see how it does. Now, there were some glitches. The Ioniq 5 did stop. They had to restart the charge. Didn't play nicely with Tesla. That's the kind of thing that normally gets fixed with over-the-air updates, or the engineers will look at logs and things like that. I wouldn't worry about that. But the takeaway on this, and I can skip forward in the video, is that on home turf, with home court advantage, as it were, the Tesla Model 3 lost. The Ioniq 5 did better because of, and Tom can explain this better than me, because of the charge curve. So yes, the Ioniq 5 only peaked at, I forget, 123 kilowatts, probably peak. Model 3, yeah, it can probably dive in somewhere near 250, just under, but it ramps down so quickly that by the end of the charge, you know, the Ioniq 5 is still rocking twice the charge speed. So Ioniq 5 was the winner on this. Or, Tom, I know you're a big fan of working out miles per kilowatt hour or miles per minute. The Tesla is still... This is what we do for fun. This Tesla is still going to smash it because it's so much more efficient. But it's interesting that over a 10 to 80, on a supercharger, a Model 3 still loses.
Yep, yeah. And it's very interesting. I'm so glad they did this because I'm over the weekend, I'm going to talk about Hyundai and Kia's transition to NACS. I'm going to make a video. It'll probably be out next week. And I was trying to calculate what the 10 to 80 would be on a new IONIQ 5. And I was saying I would expect it to be between 28 and 29 minutes. It ends up being 30 minutes. So I was pretty close, just discussing the difference between that and if it was charging on a CCS one station, which should be about 20 minutes, that you can actually charge a lot faster on a CCS station with an IONIQ 5 than you can on a supercharger. But just having the access to them now is fantastic, because honestly, you're on a road trip. Who cares about 9 more minutes? You know, that put between on a stop, really, in my opinion. I know I don't. I know there are some people that, you know, their time is more valuable than mine. So every minute drives them crazy that they're sitting there waiting. But when I go on long trips, I just chill. And honestly, if it takes another 7 or 8 minutes longer, it doesn't matter to me. What you were talking about was what I talk about a lot. And I don't think a lot of sites talk about that. Is miles per minute of charging. I kind of make that as my benchmark on state of charge. And I'm actually compiling a long list of all the EVs, and I'm going to be publishing, it's going to still take me a little while, miles per minute charging rate. And that to me is most important. It's great to say it charged to 80%, but if your EV goes, 100 miles on 80% and my EV goes 400 miles on 80%, we're not comparing apples, So I think it's good. And I love that where Hyundai made the first step and jumped into the NACS arena. I know what Kyle was talking about, the fact that he disagreed with this. He thought that Hyundai jumped the gun too soon and they shouldn't start installing NACS on their vehicles. I think he commented last week and said they should be the last company that starts transitioning to the NACS. But it's one of the things that I disagree with Kyle on. I'm glad that they did. I think this is great. You're going to have to carry around an adapter with you in today's market in the US, no matter what you have. If you have a native NACS inlet, if you have a CCS one inlet, you're going to have an adapter. So, what difference does it make which one you use? It's just good that you have both. And NACS is the future of the industry. So, I'd lean towards saying it's better to have your vehicle equipped with a NACS port, even if you're going to charge a little bit slower out of that native NACS port when you're on DC fast chargers than you would if you use an adapter and go to a CCS one station. So I think it was a good move on Hyundai doing that. I'm just curious to see what happens with the Kia Hyundai adapter stuff, because we still don't know exactly what their plans are going to be with what they're releasing and what they're going to say about 350 amp versus 500 amp adapters, and are there going to be disclaimers and so forth, which we talked about last week. That's going to be interesting. And with Kia announcing that they were going to delay their...
What do you know about this? Because last September they told us January 15th, which you and I said at the time, that's awfully specific. They said January 15th, you can plug in your Kia on the Tesla Supercharger. We were like, is they saying that for external reasons, internal reasons? Are they just drawing a line in the sand? Because why not? But they gave themselves zero wiggle room, and it turns out they needed some. Have you got any insight on this?
I don't have specific insight on it. I can only assume that it's because they're just not ready with their adapters, because they said they're going to send the adapters out. We kind of know what adapter they're going to be using. It's a low amperage adapter. There still could be internal discussions about that. I came out strong and made a video that did very well criticizing Kia for releasing an adapter that will work fine on their vehicles, but if people use them on other vehicles, we just don't know what's going to happen. Is the charging just going to stop, which is what I was told by Kia. It won't derate. It'll just shut off. And then you'll have people saying, well, what's going on with this? Why doesn't it works great on my EV9, but when I try to use it on my Mach-E, it doesn't work, or my Lightning or whatever. So I just think it's adding confusion to the market that we don't need, quite honestly. And it wouldn't be that much more for them to just have an adapter that was rated for 500 amps. But we've already talked about that. I don't want to talk about that too long here today. So I think they're still just trying to get maybe the adapter straightened out, get their background set up with having the communication process work great. I know Hyundai, I talked to Hyundai recently, and Hyundai was kind of a little, Hyundai's media was a little surprised that so many people assume that they too were going to have access on January 15th. They've never said that. And I admit I'm one of the people that have said Hyundai and Kia will have access January 15th, assuming that that was the case. And a lot of people did online, but you know, the people I talked to at Hyundai said, look, the vehicles have access now. You know, you can plug them in. They will work, but we're not announcing it yet because we're not going to announce that we are open until we are fully ready. Meaning we have adapters. We can send the adapters to our clients. We have the app functionality working right now. If you want to use a Hyundai on the Tesla Supercharger network, you have to go through Tesla's native app. Yeah. They don't want you to go and use the Tesla app. They really don't want you because Tesla's capturing all that data. And then you're training a customer to use that app. Once their app is ready, they won't use it, you know, because they're so used to using the Tesla app. So that's why Hyundai has basically come out and said that. But right now they work. And you know, if you use a Kia vehicle, but enter the on your Tesla app, you say you have a Hyundai Ioniq 5 instead of your Kia EV6, it'll work. I've had a bunch of people message me and say, look, Tom, my Kia, you know, EV6 is charging on Tesla superchargers now, but I had to tell my Tesla app that it was a Hyundai vehicle. So they're working, but it's neither company is officially open yet. You know, they're not going to announce it until their apps are ready. They know that the communication process works. We saw here with the Ioniq guy that the charging session stopped briefly. Maybe that's part of the fact why Hyundai hasn't said, go ahead, use them. You know, we're officially on the network. They still could be working out some kinks. So, you know, evidently both companies, just because, and I see someone says EV9 worked like a charm, just because you had one good charging session doesn't mean that everything's worked out. You know, you could have an issue in the future, and that's possible. There's got to be a reason why both of these companies have, you know, while their vehicles work right now, they won't announce that they work.
Yeah, and you don't want someone to go on and have their first experience be a terrible experience, especially if it's something that's not in your control as well. It's the old prologue trick of telling the Tesla app that you're driving a Blazer or something. It's the same platform, and you can do a charge, but probably wouldn't recommend it unless you've got a YouTube channel and you just want to make some content and get noticed. But yeah, you can charge your EV6 now. There's things have happened in the background, but we'll wait and see when they, you know, officially get to it. Good stuff. All right. Well, look, hey, let's.
Yeah, and by the way, I did ask Kia for an official, an official statement on it. I didn't get much, but this is what I got. I just got it 2 days ago. There will be a slight delay in Kia supercharger access. We are committed to an exceptional ownership experience and expansion of the network of available DC fast chargers for use by our EV customers. Well, for use by our EV customers is a very important component of Kia's growing leadership in electrified mobility. And I also asked them a lot about the adapters and said, hey, you know, I know people are going to be using third-party adapters. What's your official stance on that? And on your second question, official warranty coverage may be impacted by the use of a third party or aftermarket adapter. Just pretty much what everybody else has said, but that's an official statement from Kia.
Good stuff. Some of those press releases and responses that we get, we love the people that we work with in the car industry because they allow us to get information, and sometimes you get stuff off the record, you get tips, but sometimes they write stuff that you're like, I don't need the blurb. I don't need the press release. Just give me the answer. But anyway, we're grateful. We're grateful for everything that they do, but they don't always need to fluff it up for us.
Well, that's what I mean. I wanted to talk to him. I have a whole bunch of questions about your, you know, program and everything. I kind of got like, well, I'm super busy now. I'll email you a statement.
Okay. That's fine. We're used to it.
Yeah, which is fine. You know, listen, and they are super busy. These PR people for all these companies. They're getting pulled in every other direction. I consider myself lucky when I get a hold of somebody that will give me a half an hour just to chat with on the phone and talk about this stuff. But, you know, it's interesting what's going on with Kia and Hyundai. Little different than what we've seen with the other automakers, where there's kind of like a hard date. We're open. Our app works. Here's the adapter. Here's where you can buy the adapter. This with Kia and Hyundai, it's kind of been a little fluid.
Okay, that seems like a good place to take a quick break for our audio listeners. Stick around. We'll come back with more of the Batteries Included podcasts. Okay, welcome back to the podcast. Next, the curious case of the Cybertruck, and it's probably about time that we had a little look at that. Now that 2024 is in the books, this week, the Cybertruck X account tweeted that it's America's most popular EV truck. Not that we know that, because Tesla don't release data. They will simply talk about the Cybertruck wrapped in with S and X and Semi and other programs, and they'll wrap the three and the Y together. They are the least transparent of any car maker in terms of, you know, you have a look at the PDFs that normally come out from a Ford or a GM, and it's, you know, model by model breakdown and quarter on quarter, year on year, and Tesla really keep a lot to themselves. So you can look at registration data, and there's some good people that bring that together, like of Cox Automotive and Kelly Blue Book, and some really good insights. But they tweeted this week, Cybertruck is America's number one EV truck, so we know it's slightly ahead of the Ford F-150 Lightning. But also, so that's a piece of good news. That's great. Like, that's fantastic. Well done. But how far ahead are they? And are they still? Because Electrek had a report this week. In fact, yesterday we noticed this. The Tesla started providing discounts on the Cybertruck 14 months after it was launched, but also they're moving people in the workforce over to the Model Y lines. Tesla's reassigning workers from Cybertruck to other assembly like Model Y. Back in December, they wanted employees to volunteer to switch lines, but apparently not enough people, you know, agreed. The Cybertruck's initially sales were, you know, pretty strong. Everybody that wanted to get one to, you know, fulfill a wish to drive one, to make content for YouTube channels, to, you know, just to get noticed or whatever. So had good success to begin with. And like I say, it's America's number one EV truck. But then we start to see a slowdown. There was the weird thing about the tax credit, which only just started now. So finally, you did the $7,500 federal tax credit available. The lease deals are starting to come down, although, you know, $899 a month for the dual motor and $999 for the tri-motor version is, I think, still very expensive, but maybe not when you look at the sticker price of the vehicle. Lifetime supercharging's been thrown in as well to try and get people to buy Cybertrucks. Despite all of that, people aren't buying it. And quarter four, again, they won't tell us, but the data appears to be that it was well behind something like a Ford F-150 Lightning. So yeah, over the year it did well because it got off to a flying start, but it looks like it's really slowed up. Many traditional truck buyers might view it as a luxury vehicle. Now, I'll finish this before, you know, I hear Tom's thoughts. I think Kelly Blue Book this week had a piece out how they think it's robbing from the S and the X. If you've got $100,000 to go buy a Tesla, you're a Tesla fan, you want the best that they offer. The Model S was down like 31%, which is, you know, a multi-$100 million problem for Tesla when it hits the bottom line. The X is down a lot as well. But the Cybertruck is up and sort of filling that gap. And people, and they were thinking, well, actually, if you've got a lot of money to spend on a Tesla, are those people just moving away from an S or an X because they're not a 3 or a Y buyer and buying a Cybertruck? So it's kind of cannibalizing, but that's not always a bad thing. Sometimes you've got to cannibalize yourself in all businesses and products to move forward. But what's really happening here? It appears they've got that big headline of, hey, we're the number one EV truck, which I don't know whether that bugs the likes of those working at Ford and you know, Rivian, were they bothered about those things? I suppose it would bother those people that like traditional trucks. Now, Tom, you know, I know that, you know, you've said in the past, you've got those buddies that, you know, they've got the Trump bumper sticker. They drive a truck they would never drive, some sort of Californian wedge from Tesla. Maybe they've softened a bit now that, you know, Elon is sort of de facto vice president, but maybe those traditional truck buyers are never going to buy a Cybertruck because of how it looks. And maybe Cybertruck is facing some headwinds in 2025 that aren't being discussed. What do you think? Where are we?
Yeah, I think a couple of things here. You know, the Cybertruck had over 2 million reservations, supposedly, up front. So people were talking about, you know, for the first 2 or 3 years, Tesla won't be able to make enough of them. But that was based on a much different pricing scheme that people were reserving the vehicles. They thought that they'd be able to get a Cybertruck for, you know, under $50,000. And that simply, you know, is pie in the sky at this point. And I'm not just blaming Tesla on that. All the truck manufacturers came out with these low prices. Chevrolet did, Ford did, $39,999. They were going to have an entry-level truck, and they really never materialized. Some of them materialized for a very short period of time and then got raised. And basically what Tesla has now is, you know, after the initial foundation series of 100,000, it lowered to 80,000. And now it's available for a tax credit. So that might move a little bit, but we still have an extremely expensive vehicle that is just out of the reach for many people. And the hardcore truck community, I think, in the U.S., regardless of, you know, whether they're hardcore Trump supporters or whatever and have those stickers and American flags on the back, I don't see them transitioning to a vehicle that looks like a Cybertruck. It would be possible to do an electric like F-150 or, you know, Silverado, I think. But I see a majority of them not going into that. And the looks are polarizing. People, a lot of people love the looks. A lot of people hate the looks. And, you know, it's that I think there's a bunch of things, but it comes down to price, Martin, in my opinion. If somehow Tesla were able to sell a $50,000 or $60,000 version of the Cybertruck, I think you'd see sales go up again. I mean, look what happened with Ford. Ford, with the Lightning, sales slowed down a lot. And then they started doing incentives at the dealerships. You know, they lowered the price a little bit. They decontented a little bit. They offered the Flash, which was a really good value for Ford. Although, I don't know, this hasn't been really even announced yet. I have information that some people picked it up. For the 2025, Ford is making the Flash have a smaller battery. Even the extended range battery is no longer going to be 131 kilowatt hour for the Flash. It's a little bit less. I think it's like 124 or something like that, or 125. So to get that super deal in the Flash now, you're getting a little bit less battery. But that really seemed to what reinvigorated Lightning sales. And they have been doing well. And as you mentioned, although Ford doesn't list the exact Tesla doesn't give you the exact Cybertruck sales. Most people have been able to figure out with fourth quarter sales, the Lightning outsold the Cybertruck in Q4 of 2024. It was close. I think in my estimation, when you really look at the numbers, somewhere around 1,000 to 2,000 units more. But that showed the levers that Ford pulled worked. And this is a truck that's almost 3 years old compared to the Cybertruck that has been on sale for it's still in its first full year of sales. So that should never have happened. Like if anybody told you guys, you know, in the first year of sales in the last quarter, Ford would sell more Lightning than Cybertrucks, everybody would say, well, Tesla must have some kind of huge manufacturing problem. They can't make them fast enough. That could be the only reason why that would happen. But I think the high price of the Cybertruck has scared a lot of people away. It's a great driving truck. I've driven it. Love the four-wheel steering. Love the steering by wire.
You've driven it. Said it put a smile on your face. You're like, this is crazy and it's brilliant, but it makes me happy. And if you buy a car, isn't that what it's, you know, who cares what anyone else thinks? It's all, you know, you're making a big purchase. If it makes you happy, it makes you happy. Then crack on.
And it's a great driving truck. You know, for functionality, in my opinion, for my use case, the Lightning is much better. With the big frunk, the frunk on the Cybertruck is nearly useless in my opinion. It's tiny. And that's such of the part of the you know, utility of a truck, of an electric truck, is having that front lockable storage space. My Lightning's frunk is filled all the time with all kinds of stuff. I know everything's safe and secure in there. Nobody can rob it when I go in a store in the back. Now I know Tesla has the hard cover, so you can put stuff back there, but it bounces around and you got to strap things down and everything. It's so much nicer to have it in the front, in my opinion. The Lightning is just a better vehicle for me, but I wouldn't have discounted the Cybertruck. You know, it's a great driving vehicle. I liked how it drove better than the Lightning. Certainly, I like the Lightning's ride quality. It's a softer, smoother ride, quieter cabin than Tesla doesn't make. Tesla's suspensions in general aren't, you know, in my opinion, up to that of the other manufacturers, and their noise and harshness and ride quality is typically at the bottom of the pack in comparable vehicles. But they do a lot of other things great. The software in the Cybertruck's better than the software in any other vehicle. The full self-driving that they have now is better than the driver assist systems you get in any other vehicle. But it comes down to the price. It's still very expensive. And if somehow Tesla can get that price down and sell these, you know, between 50 and 60,000, like some Lightnings are listed, and at the dealerships, particularly with the tax credit and some dealer incentives, then I think you'd see Cybertruck sales skyrocket back up. But if they're going to float in this area, this $70,000 to $80,000 plus area, I think it's going to turn into more of a flop. Sales wise, I don't think this is ever going to turn into that, you know, million unit sales, you know, that everyone would it was thinking it would be at one point.
So Thomas on YouTube asks, why are you talking about Cybertruck sales problems when it was number one? Well, it was number one in Q4, but yeah, it was number one over the year with two times the sales price. And it wasn't quite two times the sales price of the average selling price of a Ford F-150 Lightning. But I know, I'm trying to read between the lines that I get Thomas thinks, like, there's no problem here. So where I'm coming from with this, you know, keen to get your thoughts, if you're watching this live on a, you know, Friday morning, wherever you are, Friday afternoon, leave a live chat comment, what do you think? So Thomas, my point being that they have to guide, because they're public limited, they have to guide. So they guided for building a line to make 250,000 of these a year. Then the CEO, whether you think he's ever going to have his feet held to the fire, was like, well, we could do a line for 500,000 a year. And I think on one call, or maybe it was a post, he even said, well, hey, we could do 1 million a year. But the point is, if they've built Texas to make 250,000 of them a year, and everybody who's got one or wanted one has got one, like, what's going to be the catalyst for the next tranche of buyers? Now, Tom just said he thinks it could be price. I don't know. So this is the reason why the car industry is a horrible industry to be in. I mean, it's the best thing to do. If you love cars, it's the best industry. But if you are, you know, paying the bills, it's the worst industry. Because if you build a line to make 250,000 Cybertrucks a year, and you've got a supply chain, so you want 250,000 of the widgets and the bolts and all these things. Now, you can dial things up and down to an extent if you're Tesla and you're sharing parts, but a lot of those parts aren't shared, actually. This is why the Cybertruck is a very innovative vehicle. There's not that shared relationship like you've got between the 3 and the Y. That is absolute suicide in the car industry for how to have overproduction of that volume. If they really have decked themselves out to make 250,000 a year, and they've done 39,000, so this year, pick a number. It could be 20,000 Cybertrucks this year. I mean, it's a disaster, Thomas. That's why we're talking about it. Or could they?
And one more thing, Martin. Let me interrupt you. And Thomas, one of the things he's commented on says that I'll never call the Lightning a flop. 100% I will. The Lightning was a total sales flop, in my opinion. Ford expected to sell well more than what they did. I expected them to sell way more than what they did. You know, I quite honestly, and to an extent, I still am trying to figure out why they didn't sell more. I have some theories on that. I think the vehicle is good enough to sell a lot more than what it did. And I think now the proof is kind of in the pudding that sales aren't going down. As the vehicle gets older, Ford is actually starting to sell more of them. And I think more and more people are getting over the stigma that electric vehicles can't be trucks. And that was huge headwinds that Ford was facing. And they had a lot of problems at their dealers. Some dealers, particularly in many of the rural areas, didn't want these vehicles and were not, you know, telling their customers to buy them. you know, they were basically like, yeah, you don't want that. You know, get, you know, Jim, you know, you're trading in your car here. You go for the same model. And so there was a lot of headwinds, and Tesla doesn't have to deal with those headwinds because they don't have that stigma at their dealerships that Ford did. But I'll absolutely say that the Lightning was a flop. It was a sales flop. The vehicle itself, I think, is a great vehicle, but it's been a total sales flop for Ford. You can't deny it.
Yeah, this one. Sorry, this Martin. One. No worries. This one from Automotive News, which is, I think, probably behind a paywall because it's probably an industry, website, talks about how the Cybertruck is now getting discounted in inventory, which is, you know, which is the old Tesla thing that they do, which is not particularly a secret, but they use their inventory page to sell you a car at a much lower price than if you go and configure a new one. And because they only have a certain amount of colors and a certain amount of specs, they've always got inventory. And, you know, people think, oh, I've designed a Tesla. You know, I've gone into the design studio and I've configured my Tesla. And now somebody in China is going to go and, get a spanner out and make it. Of course, that's not how it works. They have a ton of data on the most common specs, the least common combinations within the configurator. And they'll make a bunch of stuff. And sometimes, nearly always, they get it right because they're so good at this. And sometimes they'll have cars in inventory, and then they'll just put a new car in inventory and discount it to, they might have made too many, you know, black ones or white ones. And so it's just the way it works. And so the interesting thing about having them in inventory is it sort of disguises it a little bit. But there are now discounts on the Cybertruck 14 months after it was launched. You can now get a good discount if you go to the inventory page. As of 3 days ago, they've knocked $1,600 off the latest, not a 2025 model, but I suppose you could argue, well, these ones maybe they don't get the federal tax credit or, you know, whatever. If you get one that's called a demonstrator, which might only have a few miles on, you get $2,630 off, which is a good, you know, significant discount as well. So here's a vehicle that was, however, whether it was the forums, the owners groups were tracking this or not, looking at VINs, whether it was 1 million or 2 million people put down the $100, much less than previous reservations and deposits for Tesla, by the way. How many of them have gone, nah, it's not for me? Like Tom had a Cybertruck reservation which you cancelled. It wasn't the right time, wasn't the right vehicle, whatever, for you to buy. So if they have got all this installed capacity to make a ton of them, I wonder how long they've known about this, because the first chink in the armor at Tesla was when, around the time the CFO was changing on the earnings calls, and they'd always guided 50% year-on-year growth. A massive growth company by any met, just a huge growth company. And they're like, well, our stock price deserves to be valued differently to the Detroit automakers, etc., because we're a growth company, we're a tech company, etc. And so when they said, well, maybe we won't be growing 50%, you know, annually, and then they came, we're in between growth phases. As they launch the Cybertruck, then they use this phrase, well, we're not in a growth phase at the moment. We haven't got a vehicle that's growing. As they launched the Cybertruck, like maybe five earnings calls ago, they were like, well, we're in between growth phases now. Hang on. You're literally launching a vehicle that's meant to have 1 million, 2 million people want it. Maybe then they already knew, hang on a minute, this is not what we thought it was going to be. I'm not convinced. Before we leave topic, I'm not convinced, Tom, that price gets this over the line, just because I think it's really divisive. I think the styling, I think where Tesla is, I just think Model 3, Model Y are exceptional. Not that I've driven the new Juniper, no one outside of China has, but those vehicles are so good, so efficient, leading the way so much. Cybertruck is such a departure from what Tesla's good at. It's kind of a curiosity, like the Roadster. The Roadster is always going to be a curiosity, albeit, you know, $250,000 one. Yeah. I don't know. Like, if you stick this on sale for 50 grand, sure, more people would buy it. But will enough people buy it to make this a success? I'm not sure price gets you over the line, just because there's so many other things. And some people throw in disagree with the CEO's stance on stuff as well. But I just think the design of the vehicle, like what it says about the person driving it in the views of some other people. I don't know. Like, I think put it on sale for 40 grand, then it's probably compelling, but I don't know.
Well,
I'm not sure.
What's a success? You know, how many units a year? We all have different opinions of what's a sales success and what isn't. You know, but what would make it a sales success in your eyes? Like, how many units does it have to sell per year? 100,000? 50,000? Yeah. That depends on what we are considering a success. If you lower the price, we're going to sell a lot more of them. Will you then exhaust the inventory of people interested and then sales dry up like it's had at this current price point? It could be. How long does that last? Do you have, let's say they were able to offer a $60,000 version of the Cybertruck, right? Tomorrow, Elon comes out with its $59,999. You know, it doesn't have autopilot or, you know, it takes a bunch of stuff out of it. And it's software locked, it only goes 250 miles or something like that. I don't know. But you'd have to pay a price to be able to lop off that much money. How long is that runway before the people interested at that price point runs out? I don't know. I know you'd sell a hell of a lot more of them because that the price point is a huge impediment now. It's very expensive. You can get the other electric trucks for less than that. What does Tesla do at this point? What do they do to inject some life into? What lever do they pull to get Cybertruck up to selling, you know, what we had thought they would be? Now, we say that in the context where, don't forget, it still was the most selling electric truck this year. But, you know, none of the electric trucks sold that well. So that's not a high bar. They didn't have a high bar to reach.
Exactly.
You know, when you look at overall pickup truck sales in the U.S., you know, the electric truck market was the Cybertruck was going to sell hundreds of thousands of copies every year, you know, and, you know, take the industry by storm. That didn't happen in the first year. It's not a supply problem. Tesla has more than enough of them to be moving out. You've seen, we saw them buffing off Foundation Series, you know, etching on the side of the vehicle. You don't do that when the vehicle's in high demand. You know, we've seen them lower the price now. We've seen them, you know, lay off workers or move workers from that line to other vehicles. So it obviously isn't meeting Tesla's planned sales, even though it still is the highest selling truck in the U.S. in 2024, although it kind of ended 24 on a whimper. It came in like a lion, you know, it immediately jumped out to being the best-selling truck because you had this pent-up demand for it. But then once those initial, you know, the 10,000 YouTubers that, you know, want to get rich on YouTube bought their trucks, it sales obviously have slowed up a lot now. This is going to be a really interesting year. It's going to be really interesting to look at the end of this year to say, did they sell the most trucks in 2025? Do you think they will? Do you think they'll beat, you know, we've got GM's electric trucks now with crazy range and supercharging. I wouldn't expect the Lightning at this point to be in contention for a best-selling truck. Dodge is going to come out, right? I think at the end of this year, is that still? I know they pushed it back with the Ram Charger, which is going to have a 87 or 90 kilowatt hour battery.
It was just under 100. Yeah. It's under 100 kilowatt hours. Yeah.
And with the onboard generator, that's going to be the work truck. If you really have serious work and towing to do, nothing will beat that. So, you know, where do Cybertruck customers come from? If you don't reach lower people in lower price points, that's the lever. I think I've said it, you know, all podcasts. I think that's the only thing Tesla could do at this point to really invigorate sales.
Yeah, well, I think they are. Well, this year we will certainly see cheaper Cybertrucks as well. Whether the federal tax credit sticks around or goes away, we don't know. No one does yet, but we are not done yet. We've got more to talk about with Tom and myself on today's podcast, but we'll take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll finish off today's topic list. Okay, right, let's get back to the podcast now. You mentioned it, Tom, about the Ram upcoming electric trucks. So the REV, the 1500 REV, as you say, the big battery on that, which was going to be 229 kilowatt hours, has been cancelled. And so no 500-mile Ram REV. It'll be up 350 miles, perhaps, for the smaller one, 168 kilowatt hour. But they're going to come, as you say, Tom, they're going to come with the Ram Charger first, which it seems like a really sensible idea, because I think probably everyone who's launched an EV truck would admit, maybe not publicly, but would admit that at this stage of the battery development, powertrain development, what people expect of their truck to do, particularly in the US, as a work vehicle, you know, when you push that to the limit, if you are hauling, if you're doing elevation, and you expect to go 500 miles, stop, refuel, and go because it's your work and your time is money, EVs aren't, that's not the use case of an EV truck. And for a lot of people, it's not, by the way, because they drive 20 miles to work and it's just, they could have a car. But I think the Ram Charger is the right thing for Ram to come with, because it's a range extender. You can still charge it, massive battery, but also it's going to burn stuff, which for many people, I think, just ticks that box.
Yeah, you know, quite honestly, I'm certainly not surprised that they're not going to bring the 229 kilowatt hour battery pack to the Ram REV. I think the next move is canceling the Ram REV. I don't think we're going to get the Ram REV. And okay. Quite honestly, if I'm an executive at Stellantis, I won't sell it, because I think their sweet spot is going to be the Ram Charger. There's already a bunch of fully electric pickup trucks out there. If somebody really wants them, I think if they do bring it, as much as I hate to say that, because, you know, I'm a big electric vehicle advocate and I don't like plug-in hybrids personally, but for the truck, I understand why it makes a use. There's a tremendous use case for it, and it eliminates a lot of the problems that electric pickup trucks have, is, you know, towing long distances, which is their Achilles heel. None of them, even a Silverado or a Denali EV with a giant 200 kilowatt hour battery pack, is good at towing long distances. And the primary reason is there's no place to refuel them. We don't have pull through stations, and we don't have tons of them everywhere you need to go. So I don't care how long the range is. I don't care if you put a 300 kilowatt hour battery pack in it. It's still going to suck at towing 10,000 pounds cross country. And there are people that need to tow very long distances. And so to me, I wouldn't waste my money on the Ram REV until, you know, battery costs come down, until more people are open to electric pickup trucks. We see with, you know, the Lightning sales, with Cybertruck sales, with Chevy Silverado early on sales, there's not as big an appetite for fully electric trucks as maybe a lot of people thought. So why add to that pool? You know, just having that extra vehicle is going to cost them tons of money to have an extra vehicle on the line to engineer. I would just keep that as like an engineering project at this point, release the Ram Charger and let Ford and Chevrolet and Tesla deal with the fully electric truck market. That's what I would do if I was managing there.
100%. And again, we talk about that with the superchargers and Hyundai and Kia, and wanting to not make a misstep and wait. And it's what Toyota and maybe Honda would probably argue, which is like, we're doing fine. Maybe Honda's not doing fine, but Toyota would say, well, look, we're the world's number one car maker. We're selling 9 million vehicles a year. Our sales are going up in the US, like 3% last year. I think it went North America, maybe up 4% in mainland Europe. Like, Toyota would say, why would we go EV? And, well, you could say, well, you would go EV, Toyota, to protect your future. You make R&D spending in the investment now. And maybe they'd say, well, we'll just do an M&A or something. Or we'll just buy BYD, or we'll buy a Chinese company. It'd be okay. So that's a good argument from Toyota. And I think Ram can look at that and be like, why would we lead? Look at what the criticism of the EV trucks that's been out there so far. Come with their range extender. China is going mad for range extenders in the last 12 months. Just come with a range extender. And then you won't get criticized. Scout are going to do the same. Like, they probably will bring a battery electric Scout, but like, we know that the range extended Scout is going to be the one that everyone buys. So,
yeah. Talking about Toyota, man, you know, how about if Toyota made a Tacoma, gave it like a 75 kilowatt hour battery pack and a range extender in that thing?
Yep.
How crazy would that sell?
Yeah. You know, 100%.
Toyota sized, a Tacoma sized you know, EREV with a decent pack that, you know, most people could drive daily without having that range, that range extender turn on, it would kill it.
No. Before we head off, we will just have a look at some of the numbers which we've got. And now this isn't like November, hopefully that still makes sense. I think it does, actually. So before we go, we'll ask, and it'd be great to get your opinion on the comments and this in the live chat as well, about whether people are changing their purchasing decisions now, ahead of any change in 3 days' time with a new administration after the inauguration. Because looking at the November data, I think it's really interesting, because the US is seeing a big spike in EV registration. So November US sales, big registration spike for pure BEVs. Obviously, people want to take advantage. I don't think it's obvious, but you could make the jump and make the leap without actually having any hard data on this. That people are taking advantage of the $7,500 federal tax credit before any kind of repealing of, they can't, there's certain things they can do with the pretty quickly with the finances behind the Inflation Reduction Act. And, you know, Republican or Democrat over, many times they've used this tool of the finances to be able to get rid of something that would otherwise, you know, have to go through Congress longer. So according to S&P Global Mobility, registrations were up 21% in November alone to 109,120 vehicles. Battery electric vehicles up to 8.3% in the US when it was normally like 7.2, 7.4, and then it jumped up to 8.3 for pure BEVs. Tesla led the way, followed by Chevrolet, Ford, Honda, Hyundai, Kia, BMW, Rivian, and Cadillac. I think that was pretty much the top 10. And in terms of specific models, Honda Prologue did really well. Now, that's like $10,860 discounted at the moment. The Acura ZDX crossover had $17,000 off. So have we had a fantastic end to 2024? And obviously I'm, you know, a few thousand miles away, so I need my American friends and my colleague here, Tom, to answer it. You know, are Americans buying EVs in November? And we would think December as well would be even bigger, just because there's amazing offers out there. And it's got nothing to do with the federal tax credit. Or is there a real sense, Tom, that's sort of permeating? Because, you know, you sometimes wonder how aware people are busy with their life, right? They don't care about EVs. They're just busy doing the stuff that is in, you know, that they got to get done, like we care about them. Or is there genuinely like an awareness of this thing that could go away and people are bringing purchases forward? Or would there not be as many Prologues on the road if there hadn't been these massive offers that Honda have been given out? What do you think? Is people genuinely going, oh, this thing might go away, I'm gonna get that EV and bring my purchase forward?
I do think there's an element of that for sure, but the majority of it, I believe, is just the year-end discounts and the incredible discounts that some of the manufacturers are putting out there. I don't know how many people follow it that closely to know that, you know, this is one of the things that's probably going to happen. Certainly the people that are in this chat room here and that follow us and that follow the industry closely know that, but the average person that has a 3-year lease on their vehicle that it's up and then shows up in the showroom and makes a point of sale decision like that, which a lot of people do, surprisingly. I could never live like that. I have to fully, you know, investigate and know what I'm going to the dealership with. But you'd be surprised how many people show up at the dealership really not knowing what they're going to leave with, and then they just leave with a vehicle. That always amazed me. But I have friends that are, you know, that work in dealerships, and they said you'd be surprised how many people do that. Those people just look at like, look, hey, see this vehicle over here? I can get you 20,000 off sticker, and now it's in your price range because of whatever reason, discounts and tax credits and all this stuff. So I think that the majority of these, the great push at the end of the year, was the super offers that so many people had on, so many manufacturers had on their vehicles. But the tax credit possibly going away, and at this point, I would say almost certainly going away, but we'll see. I don't think that played more than, you know, 10% of that additional push that we got here. Just to just to throw a guesstimate on there. I think most of it was just the super deals, Martin, because there were super deals on these vehicles.
Even in Q3, when did you get your Equinox? That was a while ago now, but even that was stellar deal.
Yeah. There's been really good deals on electric vehicles, and that's what gets people in any vehicle is affordability. And that's what goes back to why I think Cybertruck coming out with a lower price version, two-wheel drive version, is supposed to come, I guess. I don't know if there's an exact date or set on that, the base model. We don't know exactly what that's going to cost at this point, but that should be the least expensive version. When we see a rear-wheel drive version of the Cybertruck, that's going to inject some sales. Getting people to be able to afford the vehicle, getting the cost down into their price range, is the best lever that anybody could pull.
Yeah, Peter points out that the deals might have been in part because of the leases bake that in, which is true. The lease loophole is probably the first thing that they can get rid of really quickly.
Sure, but that's always been there.
It's always been there. So that's always the case with leasing.
Yeah, so that didn't really make fourth quarter sales anymore. That's been there.
Yeah.
It was the additional cash on the hood that the OEMs, you know, gave to the dealers and the finance arms for these manufacturers put in. I think that really did it.
Yeah, we saw some good deals over here. The UK is probably not the best example to give, because we had a thing called the ZEV mandate, where the car makers, if you want to sell a car here, it's fine, but a proportion of your fleet that you sell had to be zero emissions. It was around 20-ish%. It's a bit of a fudge, because you could also defer some to future years. You could effectively, you were earning credits, and you could buy those credits from the likes of Tesla. And all the, you know, car makers that were going to miss it, Ford, particularly, very, very vocal. Ford, UK boss, she was very vocal about how the, you know, UK government are pushing too hard and too fast. And then look, and there were some stellar deals in November and December. I was looking at some of the lease deals on, you know, brand new Nissan Leafs, admittedly end of life, new Leaf coming out of the northeast of England, Sunderland, sometime in Q1, Q2 maybe. So the brand new Leaf is coming, made in the UK. But either way, those deals were there, like £140, which would be what, like $200, maybe a bit less. It's still a lot compared to some of the US deals I've seen. And I've seen already, we kick off 2025 with some $199 deals in California on the VW ID4, which is now back on sale, has to recapture that lost momentum after the stop sale. And so, we had some killer deals here as well. Right. We probably exhausted that, which is pretty good. I got some little graph on screen just to highlight how far ahead Tesla. So Tesla fell to 42% of the US market, I believe it was. It's not on screen, but I think it was that number. You know, long, those of us have been around a while will remember Tesla at 70 and 80% of the US market. So they've fallen a long way as new competition has come. But still, like, you look at that, and there's only that graph on screen for our audio listeners. It's, you know, Tesla so far ahead in November EV registrations, then a long way behind it, Chevrolet, Ford, Honda, Hyundai, Kia. Although Hyundai and Kia are pointing out, if you add us together, we're above Ford, which I thought was a nice bit of, you know, hey, we all work with numbers sometimes. And so it goes on and goes down. Now, before we head off, Tom, there's one more thing we do want to talk about, and that is your NACS extension cable. So we can't go without you talking about this.
Yeah, let me see if I can pull it out.
The suspense.
Okay,
here we go.
These things do exist, even though they're just in beta testing form. This is really heavy. It weighs 21 pounds.
How long is it for a start?
This one's 15 feet, but this is just a test version.
Okay.
The version that's going to go on sale is only 5 feet. So that should be about 7 pounds if it weighs the same, you know, per foot.
It's so chunky. I can see it's chunky.
And, you know, I asked for the nice big long one so I could really, you know, test it out and even park like three spaces away and get it to work. But it does work. I'll tell you that. I'm going to have a video up on this next week. And I've been using it for a while now. And I can tell you it charges. I had my Rivian cranking out, 205 kilowatts charging for a while. The 5 foot version should be long enough to let any vehicle park in the proper stall and reach the charge port. So, you know, there's no need to have something super long like this, but this is the beta for beta testing. This is what the A to Z, who makes this, put out. It's super thick. I don't know what the amperage rating's going to be yet. They're still keeping that to themselves. I don't think it's going to be 500 amps. It will be 1,000 volts. And what'll happen is if there's heating sensors, there's four sensors, two on each end, and one of the sensors will derate the charging session. It'll lower the amperage to what it's comfortable accepting if it hits thermal limit. And the other thermal sensor will shut off charging completely if a critical temperature is reached. And both ends have two sensors. I didn't have any derating while I've been using it. And my vehicles are pulling 500 amps. Like I said, I don't know if it's going to be rated for 500 continuous amp draw. But the sensors, what will happen is if it's pulling 500 amps for 4 or 5 minutes and the sensors get too hot, they'll then send a signal to the vehicle and the charger to lower the charging rate with the hopes that the temperature will reduce. If the temperature continues to increase and the other sensor is triggered, charging stops. That's how I believe it's going to work. But I will have, I'm going to be interviewing an engineer that is one of the main engineers working on this cable. And they are actually former Tesla charging employee that A to Z hired to help work on their products. So, that we have somebody with extensive Tesla experience working for A to Z, then I think that helps, not that there's other engineers, that's a pre-qualification that you have to be an engineer, but it's, I thought it was interesting that, it is somebody that was a Tesla employee. I think he was one of the people that may have lost his job when they fired the whole charging team. They since hired a lot of people back, but not everybody, obviously. So I'll have a video on this in about a week. And I think it's going to be a great product for, people that have vehicles like my F-150 Lightning in particular, where, I have to basically have somebody get out of the vehicle and touch the supercharger with my bumper for it to reach. Rivian's not that bad because the charge port's really in the front corner of the vehicle. Equinox isn't that bad. It's not that big of a vehicle. My Bolt obviously isn't bad at all. It's a very short vehicle, but I'm still taking up two charging stalls, which I don't like to do. And if I arrive at a supercharger where the Tesla people have parked in every other stall, because a lot of old time Tesla owners are still used to that. You park in every other stall on the V2s because they power share and you'll get full power. Then you can't charge because you need two spots next to each other open in order to be able to charge, because you have to take up two spots. So, having the ability to just whip this thing out and plug in and park in the same spot and not have all the Tesla people looking at you like, I mean, it's bad enough that you're using quote unquote their network. It's not their network. It's Elon's, it's Tesla's network. But people look at it as, this was our network. Now you're here. That's one thing. But then the fact that you have to take up two of their spots to charge your one vehicle, I can understand why people get upset about this, particularly if now they're behind you waiting for a stall to open, and there is an open stall, but they can't charge there. So I think this will be good for that. Of course, Tesla's coming out with the V4 stalls now that have longer cables. Eventually, we won't need this thing, but I think in the interim, it's going to be an interesting product. I think A to Z is going to sell for under $200. I don't have final price on that yet, but I think it's going to be under $200, and wow. I think a lot of people are going to think that it's worth it.
And so, how does it lock in? Is there what's the mechanism that you can't accidentally just unplug it?
Yeah, so it's like the adapters,
right?
It has the same type of locking mechanism. I will say this prototype that I have here doesn't have the production locking mechanism.
They trust you not to unplug it when you are sending
it.
Oh,
it still locks. It still locks. You can't unplug it, but they're going to have a different type of locking mechanism. One that's automatic. Like if you remember, A to Z had a slide lock when they first came out with their NACS adapter, and then they updated it and made a push button that unlocked both ends. They're going to have something similar to that. Now, Anthony, that's my guess. Don't hold me to that, but I think that's around where the pricing is going to be. And it's a 5 foot long cable. Somebody's asking, it's going to be 5 feet long. I just don't, the one thing that I don't know is what is it going, what's the continuous load amperage going to be? I don't think it's going to be 500. I think it's going to be somewhere in the 350 range. But again, that's a total guess on my end. I'm hoping to get some more clarity from the company. To be honest with you, they are, I don't think the A to Z has made a final determination that the cables are being tested in China where they're made for different continuous loads. And at that point, I think it's going to be a decision of, well, how fat do you want this thing to be? How heavy right. do you want it to be? And that's going to be a determination. But, you know, as I said, even if it's, let's say, rated for 300 or 350 amps continuous load, that won't mean that your EV can't pull 500 amps for the first 5 minutes or so and then derate like EVs do and not be throttled. But it's possible that, you know, that you could have throttling and not get the full power, but, you know, you're still able to pull in and park and charge. So I don't think too many people will complain about that.
All right. Well, if in the meantime you want to go get your NACS adapter and then have the coupon code ready for when this cable goes on sale, you go to the A to Z EV shop. Make sure you state of charge to get your discount in there. All one word, state of charge. Put it in, and then you get a nice little discount on your NACS adapter as well. Thank you very much, Jordan, for showing up at the end. Cheers, mate. Yeah, yes, we're done, by the way. All the heavy lifting's been done today, but thanks for joining in. Jordan says, good morning, what I miss. You missed us raving about your Tesla Arnic 5 supercharger video earlier, which is very, very good. And another awesome out-of-spec video from you guys. Nice balcony action at the end. A little addendum at the end with some details on screen. Always appreciated. Then we can read off of it and steal on this here podcast. But there we go. Hey, I think we're done. Did we get away with it?
We did it. You guys had to deal with the two least entertaining members yes. of the Batteries Included podcast. So
we did it.
Thank you for all of those that stuck around with me and Martin for today. We're able to somehow string along an hour and a half without you all leaving. So thank you. And if we weren't that bad, give us a like. So, you know, the other two members of the team can look and say, hey, you know, they actually got a lot of likes this week. Maybe there's something there.
Yeah, absolutely. See if I can find a quick picture, or maybe I can't find it too quickly. But we did get a picture of what Dom is up to. I haven't got time to show it, but it was just a local beer that he sent us. This is the local beer that I'm drinking. He's switching off, which is a good thing. And he's like, "Can I do anything for the podcast this week?" No. Go and sit on the beach and drink the local beer. You deserve some time off, Dom. So that's what he's doing. And yeah, Craig, I appreciate that. Yeah, I've been off. I've been out of action for a while, but I'm delighted. Just recorded a podcast earlier. I haven't posted it yet, but I just recorded the first one in a long time. And glad to be back. Well, that's your podcast for today. Thanks for liking, subscribing, being with us. The live chat's been crazy this week. Thank you so much. But of course, if you miss us on the live show on a Friday, then leave a comment on the YouTube video because we love to see that all through the week before we are back. Thanks for joining us, and we will see you all again very soon. Well, there's no Dom. Hey, Tom, say ciao.
Oh, really?
Yeah, go on!
No. Ciao!